number two, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday. And it is that time, one of our favorite times of the week. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, and of course the head coach at Innsworth. And it's presented by our friends at Southeast Financial Credit Union, who on your financial journey are with you every step of the way. Check it out. All they can do for you at southeastfinancial.org. Tim, what's up? How you doing?
Doing great. How you guys doing?
We are doing fantastic. I want to start with last week's preseason game, and all the talk with Cam Ward was, you know, just missing throws, and that at this point in his career, why is he missing some of those throws? And one in particular was a screen over to Wandale Robinson that he just threw it way above his head. I have never played the position of quarterback. You have. What is kind of, as you dissect that, maybe the issue? Is it just it's a new receiver? He's not on the same page as him yet. But why is he missing some of those simple things?
The right receiver's 5'8". His catch radius isn't the same.
That you know, too.
There's always a number of issues, you know, that come up in terms of accuracy. It's like, all right, are your feet sloppy? You know, it's this time of year when it's insanely humid. I remember my brother calling me when he first got to Tennessee, and he was like, every ball is like the wet ball drill because of the humidity, you know, at like this stage right now. So, you know, there are factors like that. So to say, I don't know that it's fair, you know, on a preseason game, you know, and then going back to last year where it obviously was, you know, a not ideal scenario to be like, hey, accuracy is an issue, especially when he was accurate in college. And so I would just kind of start that way to say, I don't know that it's necessarily fair to say, you know, to just pinpoint one thing. Now, if you were to say to me, what would be my reaction to Cam Ward in dealing with inaccurate throws, I would say this, and I think this does go back to college, is he is definitely a player that will throw the football with his feet all over the place. Now, what's interesting about that is that even going back to college, like he was oftentimes accurate in doing it, right? So just like classic example, right. If your feet are all over the place, meaning if you overstride, you know, that means your left shoulder is going to go up, which means your right elbow will go down, which means the ball will typically sail on you. Just something as simple as that. Or, you know, if you're throwing to your left and you're not, your feet are not open to the target, you're going to throw behind the target. If you're throwing to the right and your feet are, you know, not situated to throw that direction, oftentimes the ball is going to die on its way there. And so will, you know, end up at the feet of the receiver, especially if he's running away from you. Like there's always things like that, that can come into play. And I think that he has been a guy that's how he plays. Now, Aaron Rodgers plays that way, but because of his just ability to compensate, it's a little bit like, you know, Dirk Nowitzki, like he could shoot these like unbalanced jump shots, because that's just how he practiced. He worked on it, and that was kind of part of his game. If I were coaching the quarterback, I'd be like, listen, let's ride with training wheels first, then we can take the training wheels off, and you can do whatever you want to do. So that would be my approach to it, because I do think his feet are all over the place.
So typically in the preseason, you're not game planning. I don't know if you even have a script for the first, you know, 10, 15 plays. That you would in a regular season game. How much can that affect a quarterback like Cam in the way he plays?
Yeah, that can have a big effect. When you say you don't game plan, like really what that means is this. You don't spend, you know, you don't take a four-game breakdown of that team and what they do in the preseason and have a really good feel of, okay, on third down, we're going to get man coverage. We expect to have inside leverage here, and this is why we're running this route combination. You know, instead, what you have is, yeah, you know, we're probably going to get something like this. And so these are plays that we have run this summer, and we think it's pretty good, and we'll have an answer versus, you know, most things that we could get, right? And so, you know, you may be running that play with somebody that has run or practiced that play this week, or maybe they haven't just because maybe we're not playing somebody. So, you know, so you definitely – should not offensively have the same type of kind of sharpness and detail that you would in a regular season game. So that 100% can impact, you know, your ability to convert on a third down or, you know, be on the same page as a receiver if there's a route adjustment. So that's real. That definitely is the case. And so, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why, like, getting too high or low off of a preseason, you know, preseason performance, even if it's more than one preseason performance, you know, is a little bit of fool's gold, really, in either direction.
I love it. Tim Hasselbeck is with us, sponsored by Southeast Financial Credit Union. And, Tim, listen, Chase knows this. Dr. Crane knows this. If you need me to co-sign a loan for you, I got you.
Okay.
All right? Is that okay?
Okay. That sounds good to me.
I got you covered. Listen, my credit score is like Ted Williams, around 400. So I'm always batting over 400.
Okay. All right. That's good, because right now, like a lake house, maybe a cabin up in the mountains.
Yeah,
that'd
I got you.
Right now.
I don't mind co-signing anything for you. By the way, I sense you're a little down right now. Dr. Crane hit it.
Nice.
That's a little Boston vibe for you, right?
Yeah, it is. A little NKOTB.
Yeah, I figured you're a blockhead, so that'll fire you up for practice today. Now let's get back.
Hey, I just found a new soundtrack for practice today.
We have it, and your brother's like, what the hell's going on with you?
No, hey, listen, you know, sick. He's like 50 years old. He'll be 51 in September. That's right up his alley.
Oh, like,
he might deny that he was at a concert of theirs, but, like, listen, he probably still talks to Joey Mack.
Oh, yes. Okay, buddies. I like that. Let me ask you this. You were on the Drake May train 2-3 years ago before he did what he did last year. What did you see early on with Drake May, Tim, that you're like, this guy's got it? How did you know he had it?
I feel like you shorted me a little bit. I was on the Drake May train after his first college start, which I called. And I'll tell you a couple things that happened. Met him in the production meeting and realized, it was like, man, this is like shaking hands with Drew Bledsoe. I mean, he just was every bit of 6'5". His hand just kind of flex, you know, is like shaking your elbow. His hands are so big when he shakes your hand. And this, his confidence, his you know, just could tell his understanding in the conversations that we were having. And then you could just kind of get the sense of his competitiveness, you know, like the youngest of, you know, all these boys in his family that were all kind of elite athletes in their own right. And it was like, wait a second, this guy is like made and built for this. And then when he played, I thought, like, this is incredible. This is one of the best things I've seen out of a freshman quarterback. And it was interesting during the game, Josh McCown, who's now the quarterback coach for the Minnesota Vikings, he texted me and he's like, I feel like this kid could play in the NFL right now.
Wow.
And I'm like, you know what? Like, I kind of like, this is crazy, but like, if he like continues to play like this, which I think he ultimately did, I'm like, people would look at this guy as number one overall draft pick. Like, he's that talented. He's that big. He kind of exudes that type of posture. And so to me, it was just obvious. It's why, look, when in the process, Joe, I said, he's as good as any prospect that I've seen come out. Anyone, you know, like Matthew Stafford included, he's that impressive.
Is he at the right place? And I don't mind make this a Patriots segment, but
yeah.
We talk about Cam Ward and the work he's got to do and all these young quarterbacks and Jackson Dart, the work we got to do. And it's like Drake May was dropped in there like, here's what you need to attain to. Is he at the right place with Vrabel and that organization to really succeed?
I think that they have the right structure around him now, yeah. Now, had he been drafted in New England 2 years earlier, no, it would not have been. And you know, like, you know, to make it not a Patriot segment and say, like, okay, well, like, how does it matter? Well, like, look at Daniel Jones. Like, Daniel Jones, it was not even close to being good, you know, in New York. And then next thing you know, it's like, wait a second, like, they feel really good about him in Indianapolis. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say, and I'm big on this, quarterback is a dependent position. It depends on the players around you, but it also really, you know, the organization, the coaching, all of that, you know, is vital. So, look, I think that, you know, leadership decided that last year it was not the right group around him, And now, you know, we'll get a chance to see if, you know, 2.0 is the right group.
So Sam Darnold rolls into town this weekend with the Seahawks. When he came out, I mean, he went to the Jets, and we know what happens when you go to the Jets. But did he have all the mechanicals that you like in a quarterback, which you end up seeing in Drake May a few years later down the line?
No, I did not think he was the same as May. I thought he was good. I remember having a conversation with my brother about him, you know, when he was coming out, and, you know, it was, I didn't know that it was a slam dunk. Now, you know, I think more importantly than the physical ability or any of that stuff, I think what we learned about Sam Darnold was, you know, the mental toughness to get through it. And I think we've been fortunate in recent years, whether it's been Sam Darnold or Baker Mayfield, Daniel Jones, who we just mentioned, like there have been a few guys that in the past, I don't think guys had the mental toughness necessarily to weather the storm of being a, you know, quote unquote bust somewhere and then having it work out. Right. So
yeah.
I think that that's probably what's impressed me the most about Sam is that it wasn't easy at the beginning and he definitely weathered the storm. I think it'd probably be fair to say that, like, you know, at least here, you know, people locally, like Kerry Collins, like, I think it's probably fair to say, look, he weathered the storm from Carolina to New York for sure. And, you know, I think people here got to see the benefits of that once he became a Titan.
What did your brother learn from backing up Brett Favre for those years in Green Bay? Brett Favre, you talked about how just, you know, incredible he was, but I mean, he was unorthodox. And what did your brother learn from him?
Well, it's interesting. My brother's very first, you know, kind of quarterback meeting, Andy Reid, who was the quarterback coach at the time, said, he's like, all right, like he's talking to Matthew, and he's like, look at this. See this right here? See what Brett does? Don't ever do that. Don't ever see how he plays. Like he's going to do all these things as a player, and whatever you do, don't do that because you can't. Now, what I do want you to learn from him is when he comes into the facility, how he knows everyone's name. Doesn't matter if it's a security guard, somebody in the lunchroom, if it's somebody in the custodial staff, it doesn't, like, a secretary, like, it doesn't matter. Like, look at how he is infectious in terms of the way that he leads the entire building. Like, not just the football team, but the entire building. And, you know, and I think for Matthew, like, that was really good because it was like, look, Brett Favre was the leader of that organization. Right. I mean, top to bottom. And that was really good advice from Andy Reid.
We will have more with Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN and Innsworth. Coming up next is Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. ESPN NFL analyst and Innsworth football coach Tim Hasselbeck is presented by Southeast Financial Credit Union. On your financial journey, they're with you every step of the way. Check it all out and see what they can do for you at Southeast Financial .org. Tim, okay, so let me preface this question by saying I understand the vast difference in high school football and the NFL. But like, for instance, when you have a young player come in, a freshman or a sophomore, and you're going to be putting them in, you know, a situation where they're going to be playing more, is it more beneficial to their development to see them maybe struggle at first and have to learn from their mistakes, as opposed to, you know, coming out and just being lights out from the very beginning? And I ask it that way because we saw some rookies, Fernando Mendoza is one of them, have some good preseason debuts, and obviously you want that, you want that confidence, but what can the coaches take away from that if they're doing everything right?
Yeah, I mean, I've always felt like it's easier to get better, you know, doing it than watching someone do it, right? So, you know, quarterback especially, it's like, look, that's great that I'm going to sit and I'm going to watch a guy and I'm going to watch him, you know, throw that interception or that touchdown or make that protection adjustment. But, you know, making the mistake yourself, in some ways, it's like being a parent. It's like, hey, don't touch that stove, it's hot. Don't touch that stove. Really, a better example is like growing up in the Northeast or like starting to raise my kids in the Northeast, like, hey, it's cold outside, put a jacket on. Well, like, until they freeze their butt off outside, like, they're not really going to listen to you, right? Like, they don't really learn the lesson. So I think it's the same thing with playing quarterback. Like, you don't really know until you throw that interception. You don't really know until you make that protection adjustment. So I think it's better to learn on the job. And, you know, I think the notion that, you know, throwing a guy out there too early and it ruining him, right? Like, a lot of people would said that about David Carr. I just think you have the wrong guy if it's going to ruin him, right? Like, if you have the right guy, if he's made of the right stuff, a little bit like we're talking about with Darnold, if he's mentally, you know, tough enough to go to do it, then you drafted the right guy. So, you know, that's how I see it. And so, I think that, you know, as you approach, you know, these young guys, doesn't matter the position, you know, going out there and kind of making mistakes early is not the worst thing in the world.
Okay, so along those lines, you know, I said last year, would it benefit Cam Ward to sit, you know, for half a season? Because we have seen a proof of concept where that does work,
yeah,
you know, for certain guys. But then they ultimately go ahead and play him. And Sam Darnold uses an example of how many times you see a guy just doesn't work and they give up on him and then it works somewhere else. Are teams just giving up too quickly? Is that the problem?
Yes. Well, that's what it is. I mean, it's teams giving up too quickly on guys, for sure. I mean, listen, the Carolina Panthers, you know, had Sam Darnold and, you know, Baker Mayfield, you know, at the same time. Like, those are both starting quarterbacks in the NFL. There's no question that teams give up on quarterbacks too quickly, and it's usually because of just the pressure of, hey, you have to win. What will keep everyone at bay in terms of the criticism, things of that nature? How do we get a guy on a rookie contract? I mean, there's so many other factors, but 100% people, you know, teams bail on the quarterback, you know, before they probably should. So, yeah, and there's definitely been proof of concept both ways. Patrick Mahomes didn't get thrown out there right away, and I'm sure there was some benefit to it. Look, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, because I'm very convicted that, you know, you're going to learn better in terms of on-the-job training. That being said, you know, an embarrassing moment, and, you know, or being saved from an embarrassing moment can help you. Eli Manning had a 0 quarterback rating in a game against the Baltimore Ravens his rookie season. It embarrassed him. Now, he was able to weather the storm of it, but it was an embarrassing, humiliating thing to go through. Would he have learned the same lessons watching Kurt Warner struggle that year? Maybe. But you know, I think that ultimately you can learn from both situations, but it's better to learn on the job.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. When you look at current coaches around the league, who are a couple that stand out to you is maybe being the best at developing young talent? And the reason I ask this is we just saw the 49ers, and I feel like Shanahan has been good at that. I mean, you got the young Deshaun Stribling, who had a good preseason game. Obviously, we see what he's done with the quarterback position. Who are some coaches that stand out to you that are really good at developing that young talent?
Yeah, Shanahan's amazing. You know, Sean McVay's amazing. Yeah, another conversation I had with my brother this week was, he's like, that was a master class, what McVay did with Ty Simpson. Like, it was, I got a young quarterback, what am I going to do? How am I going to get him out there and get him comfortable and do some of this stuff? And then once we have some success, okay, now we'll open it up, start doing some fun stuff. Like, that's, you know, that's kind of how he did it. And so I think that McVay's got an amazing feel for that. And so, I think that there's been an element of the, I guess I would say the Bill Walsh to Mike Holmgren to Andy Reid to obviously Shanahan was part of that with Holmgren, you know, to Kubiak, which obviously Kyle Shanahan down through McVay, that they've been a part of, that I think it's just been really good for quarterbacks. You know, it's tried and true stuff that, you know, that's not necessarily a coach's quote unquote like idea. It's no. This has been born out of, shoot, we're going on 50 plus years now of, you know, why things are this way. Like, why on, you know, Hank, do you write on your fifth step, throw the over the ball? You know what I mean? Like, why, like all of the, you know, why is the guy split this way? And so, I think there's value in that. You know, it makes it very clear in terms of how you coach a quarterback.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck on the Chase and Big Joe show, you know, I think Dan Marino is the greatest quarterback to play of all time. I think he's the greatest. When Marino blew out his Achilles in 93, when he came back, he said, from that moment on, every time I planted, I was in the back of my mind, I was worried it's going to happen again. Patrick Mahomes coming off his first serious injury. You played quarterback, Tim, at a high level. Is that in the back of his mind like, oh, my gosh, could this happen again?
Yeah, I'm sure for all guys it is. You know, there's some interesting NFL Films footage of when Brady came back, that first preseason game, he was missing a bunch of throws. And Belichick basically went over to him and calmed him down and was like, listen, man, like, you just got to trust it. You got to trust it. Now, I think what's slightly different for Brady is it was his left knee. And for a quarterback, that's really your most exposed leg is for a right-handed quarterback. So, you know, you kind of transfer your weight. So much of your weight is on that left foot. It's in the ground, and you have people at your feet. So I do think Mahomes has the benefit of it being his right knee. Pretty sure I have that correct on his right knee, like that is right knee. And like, if that's the case, like that, I think is different. Either way, I think you're always going to deal with like the mental hurdle of it. But for a quarterback, you know, I think it's less concerning if it's your right leg, right-handed quarterback, if it's your right leg, than if it's your left leg.
So, I mean, it'd be good for Mahomes just for Reed to tell Mahomes what Belichick told Brady, right?
Well, I mean, if he's struggling, I mean, there's part of it that maybe he's like, no, I'm, you know, which, like if it's not bothering him and he's over it, I mean, you never know. I mean, it's like somebody you get thrown off a horse, right?
Right.
Like some people, it's like, you just jump right back on it. Other people, it's like, I'm not sure, right? Like, look, I fell off a ladder as a kid. Like, he asked me to clean gutters. Like, no thanks, man. Like, I'm not, scarred.
Right.
So, you know, I just think, I think that, you know, everyone's different. And, you know, I think that that ultimately is it. By the way, I was wrong. It's Mahomes' left knee. I don't know why I thought it was his right. It's his left knee. And I do think that's a factor.
Oh, absolutely it is. I know you're busy. You got a first game Friday night with Innsworth. But when you see the Browns on TV, do you stop and watch and say to yourself, how did it get this bad? I mean, because Shador can't hit anything. Dylan Gabriel's overthrowing receivers by 15 yards. All Deshaun Watson can do is a dump-off pass, 5 yards. I mean, how do we get this bad with all these quarterbacks, all these draft picks?
Well, I mean, it's been a long, windy road for Cleveland. But, like, as an example, like we just talked about it, like, you know, teams giving up on guys too early. The Browns drafted Baker.
Yeah.
Like, would they be better off with Baker? Of course they would. Right? Not that Baker was perfect there. I think he matured. But, like, you know, was there a way to work it out? And, look, Sam Darnold was available to anybody. And, you know, obviously the Deshaun Watson stuff was, you know, probably, you know, a path that they regret. But so, I mean, look, there are reasons for it. You can understand it and all of that stuff. I'll still maintain this. Deshaun Watson's not 31 years old yet. So, like, quarterbacks play to their 40s.
Right.
I've seen enough from the young guys. Todd Monken's coached a long time to become an NFL head coach. What you do know is that Deshaun's actually done it before at a high level. He is actually capable of doing it. That is where I would be investing my time and effort to make it work. Because I think I know the other guys can't play. And so, you know, I've heard people say, well, you're not going to do that. You're going to reset it again next year. You're probably resetting it again next year no matter what. But if Deshaun can play, then you're giving yourself a chance to be able to coach the next guy. So, you know, it definitely is a disaster. You know, look, the last coach was fired because they couldn't get good quarterback play. Their defense was amazing. And so, you know, I think that that's, you know, that would be my approach to it in Cleveland.
Let's talk real quick. Another Clemson quarterback, Trevor Lawrence. And listen, I did a deep dive on this Jags team, Tim. That defense down there, massively underrated. Mm-hmm. I think Lawrence is getting better. If that team makes a Super Bowl, I wouldn't be shocked. I think it's there, but it all depends on the quarterback. And I think Lawrence has matured through the – look, he had what, Urban Meyer the first year. That was a disaster. Then he had Peterson. He got a little bit better, but now with Cohen, he seems to be really grasping his offense, and that defense is good. But I really like this Jags team if Lawrence can put it all together.
Yeah, they're just probably because of the market and fan base and all that stuff, they probably don't get talked about and considered the way, way other teams, typically would. They're a really good football team. They're really well coached. I think Trevor Lawrence is a very good player. And you're right about their defense. So, I think that, when some people look at the AFC South, people need to for sure account for is probably two of the better defenses in the NFL, reside in the AFC South. And, Cam Ward and the Titans offense, like you start to realize what the challenge is. But there's no doubt that they're a good team that won't be kind of like the sexy pick, in terms of especially national coverage. But I expect them to be in the playoffs, and I don't think teams will be excited to see them.
He is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach at Ensworth. So Whitehaven Friday night, is that right?
Whitehaven Friday night here at Ensworth, and amazing environment, Tiger Town. So if you got little ones that want to, be on the bounce houses or do that stuff, like got all kinds of fun stuff. So you guys have been over here. It's a great environment. I think I maybe mentioned to you guys when we came down from the Northeast over a decade ago, came to an Ensworth high school football game, and we just were blown away. It was like, yep, like this is what Friday nights should feel like. And our community does a great job of it. And so, it's exciting. Exciting for our kids to get a regular season game, and it's just exciting for our community to have a Friday night football game at home. Seven of them this year we have at home.
I love it. We're bringing the Game Blitz back, our high school football coverage, every Friday night. So we'll be blowing your phone up when you win games. So don't say
it. Yeah, Chase, when he calls me after a game, I answer.
Love it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he does.
Happened last year, Chase, right?
That's right. That is right. Who's your starting quarterback now? Because it was your son, right?
So my son graduated and is at University of Wyoming. Speaking of ACLs, he unfortunately tore his.
No.
And yeah. So I'll become an expert on that. you'll have to wait and see. You have to wait and see who our guy is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Tim, don't give Chase any fuel.
Hasn't named one yet. I like that.
Yeah, you have to wait and see.
I can see Chase texting the Whitehaven coach, hey, I got your insides. So, yeah, good job, Tim. Well done. Don't give him anything.
I would never do that. I would never do that to my best friend.
There are no injury reports in high school football. There are no, who knows, man, who knows who's going to be on these rosters with this transfer portal stuff.
Right.
Let's just do our own stuff as best we can, and hopefully it works out.
I love it.
Well, Tim, looking forward to it. Best of luck Friday night, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good. See you, fellas.
That is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach at Ensworth. And we are excited to have Southeast Financial Credit Union on board as the sponsor of Tim and also the proud sponsor of the Southeast Financial Credit Union Game Blitz, which will make its re-debut Friday night Metro Schools Game of the Week, which is NBA and Pearl Cone. And then Connor Newt and Big Joe Dubin, Brandon Bigsby will be along as well. We'll have the Southeast Financial Credit Union Game Blitz.
I mean, Fridays could not get any better. You guys with the game of the week, NBA Pearl Cone. What a great game. And then Connor, Brando, and I, 9:30 to midnight. I mean, it is. Chase, you started that show, the Game Blitz, with me 2012. And it was so much fun, and we rolled through it, and it's an honor to bring that high school football show back. And as I told you, look, NFL and college can have 6 days of the week. You got six.
Yep.
Friday night, give us high school football. Just let us have Friday night for high school football. You can have every other day part. We don't care. But Friday night. And what's a good thing about the show, Chase, is you've been there and Dr. Crane's been there, is that so many coaches across Middle Tennessee call in after wins. And it's really fun. It's fast show. It's a scoreboard show. And we're really honored that Southeast Financial Credit Union is the sponsor of the show. We're going to have a ball. So every Friday night, right here with us.
Absolutely. And it debuts this week. We'll have more coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday. Hope you're having a great day so far. Where'd the music go? Oh, there it is. Our show presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel, where we will be on Thursday. So do you really believe, Joe, that Jacksonville is like a sleeper Super Bowl pick?
I really do, man. Hey, look, and I start on defense. I to me, it's where defense starts everything, and that Jacksonville defense is really good. I know Buffalo went down there and punched him in the face in the super in the playoffs last year. I get all that. But I just think there's this level of excitement in Jacksonville in the city, and Tim talked about it. But within that team, that's really good defense. They've got depth. And if you got a defense, then you got to look immediately next to quarterback. And I think he's not the greatest quarterback. He's certainly not the worst. He's a little bit above average. He could be good and got some good receivers there. I mean, that's a complete football team. And nobody talks about it. All we talk about are the Bills, the Ravens, and the Chiefs, which is fine, and the Broncos a little bit. But that's a sleeper Super Bowl team. And I know it upsets a lot of people here in Nashville because it's the Jags. And I get that. And we don't want the Jags to win. I get that as well. But there's just something there, man, a certain je ne sais quoi that they have in Jacksonville that could propel them to the Super Bowl. And it'd be crazy. We're sitting in February talking about the Jags winning the Super Bowl. It's not on anybody's mind at all, but there's something about that team that I think they're going a long way this year.
Okay, that's fair. So to define a sleeper pick, nobody's really talking about them.
I think you're outside the top four in your division. So nobody talk. They're like fifth, sixth, seventh or down the line.
Yeah, the conference. Yeah, because I think the Bears could be one in the NFC, but I think a lot of people think that, and they're talking about them. So, I'm gonna go out on a stretch here, because I think realistically they might be a year off. There's something about Brian Daboll's former team, and the New York Football Giants. You got John Harbaugh that kind of got shown the door in Baltimore. And goes to the Giants, and maybe not a lot of people are looking at them. You know, that division, I don't think the Commanders are going to be very good. I think the Eagles are going the wrong way. I couldn't tell you with the Cowboys. You never know with them. I mean, if you're going to get good Dak, then it could be them. But if they got something in Jackson Dart, which we saw some glimpses last year, maybe it's the Giants.
I mean, this is your sleeper bowl.
Like I said, I think I mean, look, this is a, you know, way like just throwing something against the wall to see what happens here.
Well, you look at the NFC, the top four teams, who are Chicago. I mean, who else would you, I mean, the Rams, Niners, and Seahawks, right? The NFC West, you've got those three. Chicago's four talked about. But and so anybody could pop through that list there. I don't know, something about – and Green Bay to me is very interesting. Nobody talks about him. They're like Jacksonville to me. I would not be surprised if it's Green Bay, Jacksonville in a Super Bowl.
Green Bay's a – that's probably a more realistic pick. Because like I said, I think the Giants are probably a year off or so. But I think they're going to be better than maybe people think. Green Bay as a sleeper to – go to the Super Bowl, I think that's fair.
Yeah, and I do. And I think right now, if you said, all right, who's going to go to the NFC right now to the Super Bowl, I really like the Bears. I mean, that offense is good. The defense is really good. We saw what they could do last year in the playoffs. And, look, I know you can't – it's hard to recapture something from last year, but they're just really, really good. And, look, there's not a lot of great teams in the National Football League. I think it's like 12 good and about 20, not so good. I mean, NFC South is terrible. They're not going to go anywhere. Falcons, Panthers, Saints, and Bucks. Somebody's got to win the division, but you know, you're not looking in the Super Bowl. And then you go to the NFC East. I mean, Dallas, Giants, Eagles could be sneaky because that defense there is good. And they got rid of A.J. Brown, who everybody talked about was the problem in the locker room. I'm looking forward to a really fun year. because I think there's a lot of teams that can get there. Sure. We might have two or three teams who haven't been there a long time kind of break through and get there. And I wouldn't mind seeing Jacksonville. I think it'd be kind of neat to have a different team to get there. NFL would hate it. The NFL would absolutely hate Jacksonville getting the Super Bowl. They would hate it. Can you imagine? We got to promote the Jags.
There's a team. Oh, yeah. No, they would. They would certainly hate it. I think the Rams are the team to beat. The Rams, like, just the roster and the coaching, like, they have everything set up for them. Doesn't mean they're going to win it because they're probably in the toughest division in the NFL with the 49ers and the Seahawks, and then the Cardinals are also part of that division, but I don't think they're going to matter.
Right.
But so who really, truly challenges them in the NFC? I think you mentioned them earlier. It's the Bears. I think right now, to me, the Bears are going to be the sexy pick to potentially challenge the Rams, and then there could be some sleepers in there too.
Because you got a good quarterback. Look, am I the only one that hopes Aaron Donald gets his ass kicked? I don't think it's like, well, I've been out 5 years and I'm still in shape. I'm going to come back. I hope somebody just pancakes him nonstop, because it proves that football is not something you just hop back into after being gone 4 years. I mean, it's still a level of commitment, and I don't know. I'm not a fan of, you know, why didn't he jump on the team last year? Why didn't he jump on the team 2 years ago? Because Myles Garrett's there. Yeah. All right. I mean,
I don't know.
I don't like it. You had a Hall of Fame career. You were exceptional. I don't need to see Michael Jordan of the NFL come back and what he did with the Wizards. Do we ever talk about Jordan with the Wizards? No. You know why? Because he wasn't the same player. Aaron Donald's going to come back now. He hadn't been beaten on, hit on in 4 years or so. I don't know. I'm not a fan of all this.
Here's what's interesting. When I go look at the – and I'm with you. When I look at the AFC, the question's going to be, can Vrabel and the Patriots put Vrabel's off-the-field stuff aside, build off last year, and get back there? The Jets suck. The Dolphins suck. Did the Bills make a mistake by firing Sean McDermott? Because right now I think that could come back to bite them. Like, I like Joe Brady, but again, is Joe Brady a head coach, or is Joe Brady just an excellent offensive coordinator?
We're going to find out.
Yeah. Now he's got Josh Allen. But it's likely those two teams, the Bills and Patriots, for the East, the AFC East.
Right. Pause right there real quick.
The AFC South.
Real quick. Let me tell you about the Patriots' schedule. Their first four games at Seattle on the Wednesday night game, okay? Then you come back home and you're hosting the Steelers. Your third game at Jacksonville. Your fourth game at Buffalo. Somebody in the NFL office has royally screwed the Patriots out of the gate. At Seattle, Pittsburgh at home, at Jacksonville, at Buffalo. I mean, that is – and then they got to play the Bears down the line.
1-2 to start.
I say 1-3.
Or 1-3, yeah.
They're not beating the Bills. And then they get the Raiders at home, the Jets, at the Bears, at Miami. Those are wins. The Bears not. And then the Packers. So this is a really tough schedule. They played last year, if I read correctly, the easiest schedule of a team since 2007. So they did what they needed to do to get to the Super Bowl. They ain't going back.
We'll come back with more on this because – there are two teams in the AFC that I am really, like, I have no clue what they are. And I'm not sure they know what they are either. We'll discuss that coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game, here on this Tuesday, talking about some potential sleeper picks. By the way, on our text line, and I think I agree with this, David in Murfreesboro says, watch out for the Saints.
I love the Saints. Oh, we love the Saints. I do. I've always been – see, look, I was a Saints fan because I love Mike Ditka. Mike Ditka went there in 97. I'm like, I love it. And then Ditka was terrible and left, so I kind of stayed with the Saints. And then they had – Aaron Brooks was a quarterback, and he was just terrible. And I'm like – so I jumped off the bandwagon around 05. And then Breeze shows up and Sean Payton in 06. And they start winning games. But I've always liked the Saints. I like that city. I like they got a quarterback. Now they
like
got
Louisiana girls.
They got Louisiana girls, right? Stay away from them. We love Louisiana girls. Oh, it's so great. No, I like it. I just think it might be a year or two premature. But
yeah.
Look, Atlanta stinks. Baker Mayfield is not happy in Tampa. I don't know what's going on there. Carolina's, can they repeat what they did last year? So meanwhile, the Saints are sitting like, hey, we could play. We're good. They need some more pieces, though. But I think the Saints, he's right. The Saints could be, they may be a year or two away, but I like the way they're heading.
Well, and what's going to be interesting is, you know, if you have, even though I think Kellen Moore's done a good job there in New Orleans, there's going to be some teams that are like right there, and maybe the GM or the owner is going to go, maybe we're one upgrade at head coach away, and that's when Sean McDermott comes back in and could potentially get a job, you know, in this next coaching cycle. So, I mean, that's obviously something to pay attention to. But the two teams that I was talking about in the AFC that I have no earthly idea what they are, Baltimore that made a coaching change, and Cincinnati that I think they are playoffs or bust for Zach Taylor to keep his job.
I agree with you on both those accounts. I do agree if Joe Burrow gets hurt this year, he's going to retire. He's mentioned that he's tired of getting – because those press conferences, like, he's tired of getting injured. I mean, and I get it, right? I mean, you got your whole life to live like that. And so I still think he is a fantastic quarterback. But the Ravens are the one with, you know, Lamar and Henry, and they just paid Zay Flowers, right? Is that his name? Zay Flowers,
yes.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
They pay, you got a nice paycheck. So the defense kicks butt. I mean, there's some good things, but they got to do it, man. I'm tired of looking at the Ravens like, all right, all these players, this is the year, and them not getting there. They haven't been there in Lamar. And same with Buffalo and Josh Allen. And I thought Burrow would be back to the Super Bowl by now at least one time. He's not even come close. So that just shows you, Chase, how hard it is to get to the Super Bowl, much less win it.
Exactly. I mean, it's a tough league. That is the God's honest truth on that. So it's fun talking about this because the truth of the matter is we have no idea. You don't know a week or two in training camp. I mean, if – a texter said if Bo Nix is healthy, Denver is going to be good again. They might.
Right.
I mean, I think they have the framework there, but who knows?
Can you imagine? I mean, I sit there and look sometimes like what would piss the NFL office off more than anything about Super Bowl teams? Jacksonville versus Carolina. They'd be like, oh, God. Game postponed because of something. You know, they would – because we talk about that in Major League Baseball and hockey and all around, like – the league office won't certain – like we talked yesterday, Dallas-Buffalo in the Super Bowl would be Roger Goodell's greatest thing ever. Dallas and Buffalo. Be amazing, right? I mean, you would amazing. And now you're thinking, what about Jacksonville-Carolina? He'd be like, you're fired. We're not – that's not in the script.
If Jacksonville and Carolina happens, something tells me you would hear, I have talked to Roger Goodell. We're going to reschedule the game. We're not going to do this.
We love the NFL, but not this NFL. We don't like these two teams. It would happen.
It's terrible.
It'd be like Dallas-Cleveland in a Super Bowl. People would lose their mind.
See, I think like what about Detroit-Cleveland? I mean, two of the just hapless but fan bases that love them no matter what.
Yeah, I would not argue. I think that'd be great. That'd be a great one. But we just know it's not going to happen right there.
And look, I mean, we obviously want the Titans to get there, but, you know, 49 other states wouldn't care.
Oh, I'm outside the bubble outside the bubble of us here in Middle Tennessee, nobody cares about this football team. Nobody, is fine. You go out and win games and prove yourself. Go on, 97-98, nobody cared about the Tennessee Oilers. But when they came in 99, got to the Super Bowl, started out hot, beat the Rams on that hot October day when the Rams were 6-0 and put Kurt Warner on his butt and false start Fred couldn't stop Javon Kearse, then people realized, all right, there's something going on there. And it took a while. Now nobody cares about this team because they've done nothing. You had it in 21, the number one seed. Nobody really cared about that. And now that's been five seasons ago. You got to do something. You got to do it now.
By the way, when I came home yesterday, on one side of the new stadium, it has Nissan Stadium. They have put the name up.
Good.
So it's pretty cool. It doesn't light up yet, but I mean, it's up. So that's pretty neat.
And that thing looks massive. It's like like I said, the Superdome looks like a pimple on the New Orleans skyline. But this thing looks cool because it's like a little box, and you're coming down. If you're coming down 65 north of town and you come out Trinity Lane, you see the city right there. I mean, that stadium looks pretty badass right there. It's a great view.
It does. It does. We will have more coming in hour number 3, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.